Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org. Yes, that's right. This is Baptist Basics University. I'm Matthew Gage, doubling both as announcer and lecturer in this podcast, coming to you straight from the state-of-the-art studios located in my living room. And glad to have you part of today's lesson. We are going to be continuing our series on the Book of Acts. Lesson number 22 in that series. Well, this will be a part two of our the second missionary journey of Paul. And we will be in Acts chapter 16, verses 16 through 40. We will be wrapping up the 16th chapter here, wrapping up Paul's stay in Philippi. Once again, I appreciate you listening. I hope that you listened to the previous lesson to kind of help set this up, and I will once again apologize. I got a little sidetracked at the end and was looking to see if I had a sermon I'd preached on my website, which I didn't. But I do have the notes with me this time, and we will talk a little bit about Philippi. In fact, we'll go ahead and do that. In today's lesson, we will talk about two major stories, and they're interconnected, and that is Paul is going to cast out a demon out of a fortune teller, a slave girl who's a fortune teller, and that's going to tick off her owners, and they're going to have Paul and Silas thrown in jail. And of course, if you've probably heard the songs and you probably remember from, you know, back when you were 6 years old in Sunday school, what's going to happen there? Paul and Silas are going to be miraculously delivered from the jail. And one of the greatest questions in the Bible will be asked and answered. And that is, what must I do to be saved? So we'll go ahead just by way of introduction. I've got my notes here. I'm going to pull up. So if you hear clicks, it's the wonders of the Apple Magic Mouse as I click to bring up my notes. And boy, I'm being rather verbose so far today. Okay. Okay. The town of Philippi is situated. It's about 10 miles inland in the region of Macedonia. It is it's a very well-watered plain. In fact, it's almost marshy or swampy in areas. It's on a trade route connecting Europe and Asia. So like we spoke about before, you know, that they would travel overland to places like Troas, load up ships, come across the way, and then they would actually travel. There's actually a major road, the Via Ignatia, I think. Don't hold me to that. That runs across there. There's a major, major trade route from, you know, stuff traveling east to west. There were gold and silver mines in the area by this time, pretty much depleted. Let's see here. How far back do we want to go? It was originally a small Greek settlement around 400 or 500 BC. The town was Cranides, something like that, which means springs, which should be a testament to how much water there is in the area. Now, King Philip of Macedon, the father of Alexander the Great, captured the site in 348 BC. Very strategic because of its location and a lot of wealth, mineral, you know, agricultural because of the water. In fact, the gold mine, it is said, helped finance Philip's conquest. So there's only a small settlement there by the time of Julius Caesar, you know, a few hundred years later. And this was the site of a very important battle, which I alluded to, and I couldn't remember the details of in our previous lesson, which is why I've got my notes today. It was the final battle that really put Rome under the control of the Caesars and did away with the Roman Republic. And in this battle on the side of the Caesars was Mark Antony and Octavian, who you might actually know better as Caesar Augustus, because that's who he is going to become. And fighting for the Republic is Brutus, yes, the Brutus that helped kill Julius Caesar, and Cassius. And there's kind of a multi-stage battle that takes place. Brutus defeats Octavian, But Mark Anthony defeats Cassius, and then about three weeks later in the same area, Mark Anthony is able to defeat Brutus. So kind of a multi-stage battle thing that takes place there in the area. But nonetheless, the forces for Caesar win the day, and well, not necessarily Caesar at the time, but basically this takes the old Roman Republic system out of control of the Roman Empire. They are defeated, and Mark Anthony and Octavian are going to go on to kind of help set up a new, what was called triumvirate, and eventually, after some more battles and stuff, Octavian becomes ruler supreme of Rome, takes the title, you know, Imperator, takes the title Augustus, you know, which means, I believe, is it leading one, something like that. So basically becomes, you know, the head man ruling the empire, and does so for quite a number of years. In fact, yes, he is Caesar Augustus, mentioned in Luke chapter 2. We spoke about being a site of a Roman colony for retired soldiers. Augustus is actually the one that set this up. And most of the people were actually veterans from Mark Antony's forces that settled here. We also talked about that there was not much of a Jewish influence, that there appears to be practically no Jewish settlement. That would explain why they were praying by the river, that there wasn't a synagogue. So just a handful of Jewish people there. And one other kind of interesting note by way of introduction is that this the town of Philippi was granted something, and I'm going to butcher this this Latin, but it's jus Italicum, which basically means Italian justice. So if you were in Philippi, you were ruled by Roman laws if you were in Rome or Italy. This is something that was pretty rare. A few cities and places had it. But basically, it was not treated as if on foreign soil. It was given a lot more privilege and prestige as if it were back in the Roman mainland. It did not grant citizenship to everybody, but it did exempt them from taxes. And there was some exemptions from scourging and imprisonment that took place too. Romans especially, which is going to be very interesting because Paul, a Roman citizen, is going to be in prison. So, and they had the right, of course, to appeal directly up to Caesar if they chose. And let's see here. I don't really want to go in. I'm looking through some of the rest of my notes here. I've got some notes. There's actually 8 different people who are mentioned that are attached in one way to this church. Lydia, of course, we talked about. The slave girl, we could assume that is going to have a demon cast out of her here in just a little bit. We assume that, you know, she was saved and part of the church. The Philippian jailer. Luke, very interesting, and we'll get into this in a little bit, but evidently there's evidence because from Luke chapter 10, or Luke 6, Acts 16, verse 10, I noted in the previous lesson where Luke starts going in the first person, talking about we went here, we did this, and he joined Paul in Troas. Well, in Luke 16, 40, when they leave, Luke doesn't say we leave, he says they. So it appears that he left in there, so he stays there. And then later on in Acts chapter 20, verse 6, Luke rejoins them in Philippi, turns back to the first person, we. So it appears that Luke stayed either in Philippi, maybe went back to Troas, but, you know, he was in Philippi, and when they came back, he was still there. My assumption is perhaps that he was the first pastor of this church. And a couple other people that are mentioned, Epaphroditus was a man that the church of Philippi sent to Paul with some money. Some people believe he may have been pastor at that point, and he grew sick, and part of the reason Paul wrote the book of Philippians was just to let them know, hey, he's okay. A couple other people, Eudeus and Syntyche, are mentioned. They're two women that didn't get along, about the only problem that's mentioned in the book of Philippians. And finally, there's another person mentioned named Clement, who was just a worker in the church. So there you go. And I hope that is I hope that that's good information there. I didn't miss anything. You know, it's been a while since I preached that sermon. In fact, I'll go ahead and I'll give you the points here. I'm talking about why this is a great church, you know, because they weren't the largest town, they weren't the richest town, weren't even the most famous town. But we saw that they supported God's work, that they gave financial support at least three times to Paul in Philippians 4, verse 15 through 16. They supported God's man. That's part of the, they didn't just send money, they sent Epaphroditus to Paul to help him and comfort him. We see that they gave honor to whom honor is due in 1 Timothy 5, 17. And we see, lastly, that they were open to all. Look, they had a merchant, a slave, and a soldier, and a doctor. They were open to everybody. So that just a quick little notes there from a sermon I preached that I wish I had the audio version of, but I don't. So there we go. That'll set up a nice introduction for today's lesson. As we continue on in Acts chapter 16, we'll pick back up in verse 16 as we begin our lesson. And this is basically two major stories, and they're interconnected. First thing we're going to see is an episode with a demon-possessed girl that is going to start mocking Paul. Paul's going to cast out the demon and ticks off her owners, and they have Paul and Silas thrown in jail. So there we go. Verse 16, I summarized it to the point. What's the point of reading it? Well, we're going to read it anyway. And it came to pass as we went to prayer. So that's once again, you know, it's Sabbath, it's Saturday morning, and they are going to pray. A certain damsel possessed with the spirit of divination. So here we go. She's demon possessed, divination. She's a fortune teller, a soothsayer. Met us, which brought her masters much gain by soothsaying. Now, listen, Romans and Greeks, and they were very, very superstitious people. They believed in a lot of different forms of fortune telling, from how birds were flying to how the guts of an animal looked when you offered it to the gods. So many things, you know. A lot of them actually did go along with birds. They really thought birds were omens a lot of times. So anyway, the average Roman citizen believed in this stuff and would pay good money for their fortune, or, you know, to do things. In fact, you know, even the Roman army, before they would go out into battle, there were certain things that they would do to see if the gods were on their side, you know, just seeking the gods' favor. Or really wasn't even so much seeking or trying to please the gods. It's just, hey, let's double check and see if they're on our side. So, different things. Some of quite funny, even feeding chickens. They would throw feed out to chickens. If the chickens ate, then the gods were with them. And there's one very famous example during the Roman Republic days where a general, they did this and they threw the grain out to the chickens. The chickens didn't eat. And everybody's like, oh no, we can't fight. And the general said, oh no, we're going to fight. The chickens just aren't hungry. And yeah, they got slaughtered that day. But not to say that there's any truth in soothsaying and stuff. But that time they actually should have listened to the omen. Anyway. But anyway, so they were very big, very superstitious. They're very big, very big into fortune telling and stuff. So here we go. There's this demon-possessed slave girl who tells fortunes. Now, we don't know, how did she do it? Was she a palm reader? You know, tarot cards? What was her game? We don't know. But she has issues, to say the least. Verse 17. The same followed Paul and us, there once again, Luke writing us, and cried, saying, these men are the servants of the Most High God, which show unto us the way of salvation. Now, is she heralding Paul and Silas and Luke and the gang? No. I think what she is doing is mocking them. And I don't think she's trying to get everybody to listen to them. She's trying to make fun of them and point them out so everybody will laugh at them. That's what I believe is going on there. So verse 18, and this did she many days. So this is going on and on and on. And just like all of us, Paul was tired of it. Continuing in verse 18, but Paul, being grieved, turned and said to the Spirit, I command thee in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her. And he came out the same hour. So here we go. Another example. Wish I knew more about this. Well, do I wish I knew more about this? I wish I understood more about what was taking place here. I don't necessarily want to know much more about demons. That is one area I would like to stay ignorant and far away from. But, you know, the Bible teaches that they are real and that this girl had one and that Paul rebuked it in the name of Christ. And the demon was cast out of this girl. And as a consequence, she loses her ability to do fortune telling. So verse 18. And this did, verse 19. And when her master saw that the hope of their gains was gone, so like, wait a minute, we're not going to make any more money off this girl. They're mad. So they caught Paul and Silas and drew them into the marketplace, into the rulers. Now, once again, I was like, hey, wait a minute. Why'd they take them to Walmart? No, the marketplace. This was the meeting place. It was a big open area. Yes, it was the market, but also that's where they did business. Business wasn't situated in a courthouse somewhere. It was dealt with in the open. That's the very Roman style. So they take them down there. That's where the rulers would sit and hear cases. In fact, that was a big deal in Rome. People would sit around and like to listen to the lawyers argue the cases. And, you know, that's what they did before television. But that, so anyway, so they drag them down there to the marketplace to charge them. Verse 20, and brought them to the magistrate, saying, these men being Jews do exceedingly trouble our city. So blame it on them, you know, like, hey, look, these guys are troublemakers, rabble rousers. They're just plain ornery. Verse 21, and teach customs which are not lawful for us to receive, neither to observe, being Romans. I think anytime you hear Romans say Rome, it ought to be Rome. Yeah, put a little emphasis into it. So anyway, here we go. It's like, look, these guys, notice that they're very sneaky. They'll say, hey, man, these guys, they just ruined our cash cow. That's not what they say. They go in and say, look, these Jews, which we know are troublemakers and lowlifes anyway, you know, that's what they're saying, implying. Like, look, they're causing problems, and they're trying to get us to do things that as Romans we're not able to do. So basically what they're appealing to religious things, saying, look, these weirdos right here are trying to get us to do things that as Romans, as good, upstanding Romans, we're not supposed to do. I like this. All of a sudden, they're very moral. They're sitting here taking advantage of a demon-possessed girl to make money off fortune-telling, and then all of a sudden, they're very moral, saying, well, we wouldn't stoop down to whatever they're teaching to do. kind of strange there. But anyway, so that's what they do. Is basically, look, these guys are doing things and teaching things that we are not supposed to do. And there really were Roman laws about religion and stuff, that there were things that you could do, you couldn't do. I can't remember the exact terms, but there was one that meant, you know, basically you're doing it by the book. And there's one that meant you went a little bit beyond the book. And that one, I do remember, it was superstition. So the word superstition comes from that. And it was like, okay, it's not exactly, you know, canon that's the way we do it. But yeah, you can kind of get by with it as long as you don't go too crazy. That in the Roman religion sense, which is, could still get pretty crazy. But anyway, that's what they that's what these guys were charged with, was basically going beyond religion to the point where it was illegal and frowned upon and just plain weird. So verse 22, and the multitude rose up together against him. So boy, they got the judge, jury, and everybody upset, rose up against them. The magistrates ripped off their clothes, so you know that they are really upset because they ripped their suits, and commanded to beat them. So boy, they are upset them. Verse 23, and when they had laid many stripes upon them, they cast them into prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely. So, boy, we're going to show these guys. So they take and they beat them, which with a whip or a cane, it's not clear there, I don't think. I'm not sure, unless there's something, you know, in the Greek that would imply probably whip. That's kind of a favorite thing that they would do, time to a post, you know, and whip them. So, verse 24, talking about the jailer, who, having received such a charge, thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about the Roman prison. I think we've dealt with this a little bit before, but Roman prisons were not clean. They were not nice places you wanted to be. And there were different levels to the prison. I think we talked a little bit about this when Peter was thrown in prison. But basically, there was, you know, kind of different areas. And the innermost prison was maximum security because, you know, if you were able to get out of there, you'd still have to get through everybody else to get out. And so this jailer who basically he's been charged, he's been commanded this, and basically it is his life if anything happens to these people. Well, no big deal. You've got a prison. You've got, you know, you've got shackles. So you take them to the innermost part of the prison and you lock them up, you know, and you tie them down so they can't escape. And that's basically what they do here. They put their feet in stocks so they cannot move. And as I say, these are not pleasant places to be. They're dirty, rodents crawling around, musty hay and rotten food and rotting flesh. And yeah, it's not a good place to be. A far cry from, you know, modern American and European prisons. So here we go. Poor Paul and Silas just trying to do the work of God. They cast out the demon out of this fortune teller. And now they've got the whole town against them. They get beaten and they get thrown in jail. Boy, if that was me, I think I'd be pretty down and I would be thinking, woe is me, and singing, nobody knows the trouble I've seen. You know, boy, I would just be moping and singing every, you know, sad country song I know. But not Paul and Silas. Verse 25, what was their attitude? And at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed. Well, I'd hope I'd have the strength to do that. And sang praises unto God. I'm not sure I would be able to do that in their case. And the prisoners heard them. So Paul and Silas, in the middle of all this, they pray. They basically start their own church service. And in the middle of this dark, damp prison, they begin to sing. And just as a side note, what were they singing? Probably they were singing psalms. That's usually what they're doing. When it says sing praises unto God, they would probably have some, like, you know, gospel type songs that they would sing. But for the most part, when they sang as a Jew, they would go back and sing the psalms. So there they are. They've been beaten. They've been imprisoned, and yet they're not down. Yet they're still worshiping God. Their faith hasn't wavered, and they're being a witness inside the jail. You know, it says, and the prisoners heard them, so everybody else in there can hear them singing. So they're being a witness. Now God's going to look down now and do something miraculous. Verse 26, and suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were open, and everyone's bands were loose. So the ground begins to shake, the walls begin to shake, every cell door burst open. Every prisoner can now escape. Their bonds, their shackles have all just fell off of them. And what would normally happen in a prison like this? Everybody would take the opportunity to skedaddle, but that's not what happens here. So in the middle of all this, this earthquake takes place. All the doors are open. So verse 27, and the keeper of the prison, awaking out of his sleep. That's probably not what he was supposed to be doing. Now, perhaps he wasn't on guard, but he was there. But if he was there, he was probably supposed to be on guard. That shows just how at ease he was and how confident he was nothing was going to happen. But being asleep on duty, like we've covered before, is a big no-no with the Romans. And that right there is the grounds for the death penalty to begin with. Also grounds for the death penalty is, you know, losing the prisoners given to your charge. And he looks up, all the doors are open. He figures, boy, I've just lost all my prisoners, which means not only will he can be killed or be executed for one thing, now for two. So pretty much he is a dead man according to Roman law. and says waking out of his sleep and seeing the prison doors open, he drew out his sword and would have killed himself, supposing that the prisoners had been fled. Verse 28, but Paul cried with a loud voice, saying, do thyself no harm, for we are all here. So Paul stops him from doing this. So he must have been nearby. Paul's able to see that. And I guess because he was asleep, he didn't realize nobody left. Paul looked out and realized, ain't nobody's left, or God gave him that knowledge, you know, of what was going on. So he stops for it, says, then he called for a light. That's the jailer, and says, and sprang in. He didn't just walk in. He sprang in. He jumped into their cell in a hurry and came trembling and fell down before Paul and Silas. And remember, this guy's been sitting there. He knows about these guys. He knows the rumors. Paul and Silas have probably been a witness to him in some ways. They're being locked up. He knows there's something different because they weren't fighting and cussing and spitting and trying to bite him like every other prisoner did. He's heard them sing. He's seen their spirit. He knows there's something different about these guys. And so he comes running in. He falls down in verse 30 and brought them out and said, sirs, what must I do to be saved? So this is very interesting to me that this is probably the most famous question in the entire Bible is the Philippian jailer looks at them and what must I do to be saved? What is he asking there? Most people would take it, excuse me, that he's asking, you know, how can I know Christ is my savior? You know, how can I have forgiveness of sins? How much did he know? Did he know that? There's a part of me that wants to look at that and saying, you know, like, hey guys, I don't know what's going on, but how in the world do I save my hide? I'm not so sure there's not a tinge of that in there, but I do really believe that he is asking about, look, you know, what is this God you serve? You know, look what he just did. I want something that you've got. And because verse 31, the reply, and they said, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved and thy house. And verse 32, and they spake unto him the word of the Lord and to all that were in his house. So he actually takes them home and they're able to tell the gospel not only to him, but to everybody in his house, his servants and his family. And remember, this is like the middle of the night. Can you imagine him going home and saying, hey, everybody, wake up. You got to listen to what these prisoners said. So it says, verse 33, and he took them the same hour of the night and washed their stripes and was baptized, he and all his, straightway. So mini revival takes place here. You know, the Philippian jailer goes from ready to commit suicide to being wondrously saved and converted. And not only him, but his entire household, his family and his servants. So just a wonderful thing takes place here that God has worked out. You know, listen. This is just another example of the Romans 8:28 principle, where in spite of all this negative stuff that Paul and Silas had to go through, you know what? It really did all work out for good because God knew that there was a man there that could be saved, that would be saved. And how else would Paul and Silas have reached him? How else would Paul and Silas have met him? How else could Paul or could God have gotten that jailer perhaps to the point to accept it? It, you know, God had to take him to the edge, to the point he's suicidal, to the point that to accept the gospel. So, I mean, really, honestly, all this stuff worked together for good because there's a salvation of this man and his entire house. Well, you know, what a wonderful thing that happens there. You know, I'm sure later on in life, Paul could look back and say, yeah, see that scar? Yeah, I got that when I was beating Philippi. And you know what? It was worth it. Because, boy, God did a wonderful work, you know, through those circumstances. You know, like I said, there's a great church that was started there, but it sure took a little bit of, there was certainly some turmoil to get it started. And there was definitely some unpleasant times there as that seed was getting planted. But you know what? In the end, my, what a work God was able to do. the souls that were saved, the impact that was made, and the church that was started in that place. So there we go. They're all saved. Verse 34. And when he had brought them into his house, he set meat before them and rejoiced, believing in God with all his house. So boy, what a change. This guy who was, you know, slapping them in the innermost prison, the dirtiest, darkest place, you know, locking their feet in place in stocks, is now got them sitting at the table with them and feeding them and taking care of them and giving them, you know, medical treatment and is rejoicing. And, you know, boy, what a change. This guy goes from ready to, you know, to cut his own throat to being so joyous. What a change is taking place in this man. Verse 35. This is interesting. I think this is funny. God has a sense of humor sometimes, and this is kind of humorous what goes on here. Verse 35, and when it was day, so all this took place just overnight. There's so much stuff that took place overnight. So when it was day, the magistrates sent the sergeants in the King James there, which, boy, I don't have, those are actually Roman titles, completely accurate in the Greek. They translate them, you know, into, you know, English titles, but those are completely accurate in the Greek. I just don't remember what they were right now. But sent the sergeants saying, let those men go. So they wake up next day, they've slept on it, and the city magistrates, these leaders, have said, well, you know, we beat them, we threw them in jail. I'm sure they've learned their lesson, so y'all just go let them go, and, you know, we'll just let this kind of quietly die out. Everybody will be happy we beat them and threw them in jail, and everybody will forget about it. So verse 36, and the keeper of the prison told this saying to Paul, the magistrates have sent to let you go. Now therefore depart and go in peace. So, you know, these people come, tell the jailer, say, hey, you can let Paul and Silas go. And jailer's like, oh boy, wow, this is great. So he goes to Paul and says, hey, Paul, guess what? They said you can go. And I like this. Verse 37, Paul, perhaps showing a little bit of an ornery streak here, but Paul said unto them, they have beaten us openly, uncondemned, being Romans, and have cast us into prison. So right there, it's that, you know, wait a minute, they just broke the law, they beat us, they're not supposed to do that because we're Romans, uncondemned, they're not supposed to do that, we're Romans, throw us into prison, not supposed to do that, we're Romans, because Paul had Roman citizenship, evidently Silas did too, and as I say, like we talked about before in the introduction, Philippi was ruled as if it was in Rome, that, you know, that this, it had that jus italicum. So, you know, this was big time no-nos. Says, and now do they thrust us out privily, however you say that. Says, so you think that we're going to go quietly? They're just going to wash this, you know, sweep it under the rug, wash it all away, and, you know, think this is all going to end? Wait a minute. It says, nay, verily, but let them come themselves and fetch us out. So Paul's like, I love this. Paul, I think he's being a little mean here, but it's funny to me. So Paul says, wait a minute. They broke the law. You know, they could lose their jobs and perhaps even lose their heads for what they did. You know, they beat us, uncondemned, threw us in prison. We're Roman citizens. None of that should have happened. And now they want us to go away quietly. He says, why don't you tell them, we don't want their servants, we want them to come down. We want those same city leaders who sent us to prison and command us to be beaten. Let them come here and ask us to leave. I love it. Verse 38, and the sergeants told these words unto the magistrates, and they feared when they heard that they were Romans. The servants, I can imagine when the Paul or the jailer told these servants, the sergeants, you know, told them what Paul said. Imagine they kind of look at each other like, oh no. They head back to the city leaders and tell them, and I can imagine they're like, fellas, you're not going to like this, but we just beat and imprisoned Romans. And they're like, oh no. I can see the panic on the face. And they said, but they'll leave quietly if you'll go down there and ask them to leave. And it says they fear, because honestly, they could lose their jobs, they could lose their heads, This was a big deal. Romans took their rights very, very seriously. And not just even them themselves, but in making sure that fellow Romans had their rights. I mean, that was a huge deal to them. And when they heard that these Jewish troublemakers, were Roman citizens and what they had done, boy, I can just imagine that ruined breakfast that day. They were upset. So what do they do? About the only thing they can do, verse 29. And they came, the magistrates came, and besought them and brought them out and desired them to depart out of the city. So they actually go, and I mean, I can just imagine they're begging, like, guys, we're sorry, we didn't know, just please leave, please, we don't want to lose our jobs, we don't want to lose our heads, we don't want Caesar to find out about this, could you please just leave town quietly, we won't do it again, we promise. I can just imagine, boy, they are, putting it on, begging them to leave. Verse 40, and they went out of the prison, that's Paul and Barnabas, entered into the house of Lydia. So Paul and Silas were like, okay, yeah, first we're going to go to Lydia's house. They don't even leave right away. they go to the house of Lydia. It says, and when they had seen the brethren, they comforted them and departed. So they go to Lydia's house and say, okay, get all the church members together. They have one final, kind of service, tell everybody goodbye, and then they leave. And they're actually going to be headed to Thessalonica from here. So there we go. I love the ending to that story. To me, it is so funny. And it really is very interesting how Paul managed and kind of navigated, the world at the time, because he was a Jew. That opened some doors for him. And he very rarely played the card of his Roman citizenship. Very few times. And there's plenty of other times he probably could have that would have saved him trouble. But this is one time I think Paul honestly had a little bit of fun with his Roman citizenship. So there we go. I just love it. I laugh. I hope it's enjoyable to you as it is to me. I hope I've been able to explain it in an entertaining way. So there we go. Paul's wrapped up his ministry in the town of Philippi. And as I say, we talked quite a bit about that. A great church is going to be started there. There's a bunch of great people involved. God's done a miraculous work. And, if God had just brought Paul and Silas out of Asia and the Macedonian vision and all that, if he had just brought them to Philippi to do this, wow, what a work that would be. But God's not through with Paul yet in Greece. He's got some more people to reach. He's got more adventures to be had and a lot more to take place. And we'll cover those in the next couple lessons. Well, we're quite a bit shorter than we were last time. I appreciate you listening today. Once again, check out BaptistBasics.org, all the stuff there. I do not have the sermon on Philippi there, but you got all the juicy historical tidbits in this introduction. So hopefully that satisfies your appetite, and it's probably a lot more entertaining to listen to me preach. So anyway, check out everything there, the podcast section, Baptist Basics University and Baptist History Spotlight, and perhaps some other things. Got some other ideas maybe coming out, some of the articles. Just check it out when you get a chance. Continue listening, and next time we will cover part three of the four parts or four lessons on Paul's second missionary journey. And until then, I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today.